Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster of National Review Online in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Dan, I never thought on November 15th, just 9 days after Election Day, our good martini would be a poll. But nonetheless, that's where we find ourselves today. And Gallup, nonetheless. So, which, unfortunately, was a little too rosy compared to the real results last Tuesday. But anyway, the big fight now, of course, in Washington, in addition to Benghazi and Petraeus and Susan Rice and all that, is the fiscal cliff and all these tax cuts that are going to expire or spending changes that would happen at the start of the new year if nothing is done. This is, of course, the position Congress put itself in. But nonetheless, that's where we are. But what we heard yesterday at the president's press conference and what we've heard from Harry Reid and other Democrats is that this election was a referendum on the president's call to raise taxes on the wealthiest Americans. And so now that he's won and that the Senate is still controlled by Democrats and nothing's really changed in terms of the breakdown in Washington, well, obviously the American people want higher taxes for the wealthier Americans. But according to a new Gallup poll, while Americans don't necessarily hate that idea, there are other ideas, namely ones being pushed by Republicans, that they're much more positive towards, including taking major steps to ensure the long-term stability of Social Security and Medicare. 88% are very positive on that, with 10% being somewhat positive on that. Major cuts in federal spending, 72% very excited about that, 20% somewhat excited about that. You go down to increasing taxes on those with household incomes above $250,000, 47% extremely in favor of that, 24% maybe. So there's probably over 50% who would probably embrace that. But compared to what the Republicans are pushing, and you can throw on major tax reform, 70% plus 23% somewhat in favor of it, the Republicans have a winning issue here. It's just a matter, once again, of whether they can actually market it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to take, not just for the reasons you said, that it turned out to be a little too rosy last week, but just in general, we have to take polls like this with a little grain of salt, because they all tend to show that Americans think we should have more good things and fewer bad things, and that more should be done to reform the good things and eliminate the bad things. So, you know, we have to take the results with a little bit of a grain of salt, but here it's true that there are such overwhelming majorities in favor of cutting spending and reforming the tax code and getting ourselves out of this debt mess. And then as you go down the list, ironically, the further down the list you go, the closer you get to what we heard were going to be Obama's second-term priorities. During the election, people sort of thought that among the big things that Obama's second administration would try to get done in their, you know, before they hit lame duck status would be, you know, something like cap and trade, would be comprehensive immigration reform that was heavy on the amnesty, and would be, you know, obviously tax hikes, restructuring the tax codes in an even more progressive way, they'd put it. But you go far down the list and you find those things right at the bottom of the list. Less than half of independents favor doing anything major to address global warming or increasing taxes on the rich or amnesty. Amnesty, the numbers are really low. It's 40, you know, it's 49% of Democrats in favor of amnesty, 36% of independents, 25% of Republicans. So all the big three things that you heard were going to be priorities for an Obama second term are really at the bottom of everybody else's list of priorities. So hopefully the Democrats draw something from that and don't try it, or better yet, the Republicans, you know, can wield, you know, public opinion as a weapon if they do try it and stop them in their tracks.
And what people really, really, really hate, sequestration on defense spending. Even Democrats, only 39% in favor of that, 30 for independents, 18 for Republicans. The president, of course, in the third debate saying that he would never allow such a thing to happen after repeatedly threatening to veto any effort not to make that happen. So we'll see who ends up blinking on that, as well as taxes and everything else. The White House doubling down again today that the president will absolutely not sign any deal that doesn't involve tax hikes for the rich, even though he kind of hemmed and hawed on that in the press conference on Wednesday. Anyway, on to martini number two now. And, you know, right towards the end of the campaign, we got the Morgan Freeman ad and all these other ads from the president talking about how, yeah, we're not where we want to be yet, but we're headed in the right direction. Darn it. And America's coming back. The auto industry's back. And now we're going to shore up the middle class and everything will be rosy again. Well, according to the first round of jobless numbers from the week ending November 10th, not exactly the case. What we're seeing is that 439,000 people filing first-time jobless claims. That's a huge spike from the week before. And surprisingly, some of the biggest changes coming in the states of Ohio and Pennsylvania, which provided the president his margin of victory. So, sorry.
Yeah, maybe these are campaign workers who are filing new jobless claims. No, it's funny. The president said in the press conference yesterday, he was asked a pretty good question, which is that in 2010, you extended the Bush tax cuts, and now you're telling us again that it'd be irresponsible to do so and that you're not going to do it. Why should we believe you, and what was so bad about doing it then, and why? What was so great about doing it then? What makes it such a terrible idea now? And the president said, well, the economy is a lot different now than it was 2 years ago. And that was a funny thing to say, because GDP growth is about 2% now and is about 2% then. And actually, you know, earlier in his administration, we had that dead cat bounce, what economists call the dead cat bounce, which is that the economy was so terrible that there was a good period of growth simply because it had gotten so low. But by the end of his first term, which unfortunately we're still living through, you know, growth had slowed and people are still worried about a double dip recession. So that to me is what's interesting about his entire approach, is that he's suggesting that the economy is different now. But these new jobless numbers and the fact that, you know, despite that one weird anomalous report, we're still looking at unemployment hovering around 8% and maybe headed in the wrong direction. And with Europe and everything else that's going on around the world, you know, that double dip could be right around the corner. Who knows? So definitely a bad martini and one that everyone can share.
That comes in the wake of these companies, whether it's Papa John's or Applebee's, talking about needing to cut back. We've got Hostess Twinkies on the verge of extinction, Dan. I mean, if that had come out 2 weeks ago, there's no way the president would have been reelected.
No, but the good news on that is that the global Twinkie reserve is on the order of 20 billion Twinkies, and they'll last, you know, forever. They last longer than nuclear reactors.
Yes, they do. They do. And of course, if you didn't already hear this morning, Denny's now going to be adding a 5% surcharge to pay for their Obamacare expenses. So eat up at the Grand Slam, folks. It's just going to get worse. On to martini number three now. And we haven't talked about Jesse Jackson Jr. in a little while now, but he, of course, is a congressman from Chicago. For the last several months, he's not actually been doing his job. He's been battling depression, bipolar, whatever the excuse has been. He's been at the Mayo Clinic and so forth. Now he's been recently reelected in a landslide, of course, because it's a heavily Democratic district. But he's also negotiating with the feds on charges related to using campaign funds to pay off a female friend, quote unquote. Most people seem to think that's a mistress, renovating his house with campaign funds, all sorts of things. He, of course, was tied in with the Blagojevich Obama Senate seat in a lot of different ways. So now apparently in the negotiations with the feds, he is willing to give up his congressional seat, but only if he receives a disability package upon leaving, because it might be his only source of income. Dan, I'm sure your sympathy is just overflowing.
The heart bursts with sympathy. No, first of all, I wonder, why is there any incentive for federal investigators to negotiate with him at all? If there's enough to indict him. Why do you need to plea deal him out of a United States congressional seat? It's a privilege to serve the American people in Congress. It shouldn't be a bargaining chip in a federal criminal investigation. But then again, it's Illinois, as you said. So it frequently is a bargaining chip in federal criminal investigations. That tells you all you need to know, I think, about Chicago politics, which is now approaching D.C. levels of dysfunction, is that this guy was reelected in a landslide under federal investigation from a loony bin. Right, that's what we're dealing with. I don't know what the next guy's going to do to one up Jesse Jackson Jr. Is he going to conduct his entire campaign naked? I mean, I don't know what he does. Is he going to rob banks? I don't know what the next step is, but I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, pretty sure that's the definition of a safe seat. If you can get over 70% of the vote while being treated for a mental disorder and being under federal investigation and probable indictment, so. Once again, the Jackson family serving America with distinction. Dan, have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And be with us for the Friday edition tomorrow of the Three Martini Lunch.